Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, what's going on? And welcome back to yet another edition of WWE Rivalries. It is Friday, December 4th, as we are just trekking along. Christmas is right around the corner, and I don't know how it is where you guys are right now, but up here in Quebec, and more specifically the Montreal region, we are heading into a full lockdown for Christmas, and it doesn't look like it's going to be a too joyful time of year like we are so accustomed to around the holidays. But I hope you guys are going to be able to spend it with your loved ones, at least in some capacity. As you know, I think we're finally starting to turn a corner here with this whole COVID nonsense. It feels like vaccines are right around the corner. Hopefully we are back to normalcy. I'm hoping by the summer we're pretty much back to normal, at least in some capacity. Maybe just wear masks in large gatherings, but trying to spread some positivity. And that's the reason you guys are here, right? To get away from all that negative nonsense out in the real world, I guess you could say, and trying to escape reality. And that's what we do here at the WWE Network. And this week, as I always say, a very special episode, because I always believe these episodes are special. But we will be covering John Cena versus Shawn Michaels from 2007 in what is, in my opinion, probably the most underrated rivalry and what was one of the most underrated matches ever in the history of WWE. Matt and I actually covered their WrestleMania 23 match, I guess about a year ago on Wrestling Nostalgia, but this rivalry flies so under the radar and is rarely talked about. And when you talk about Shawn Michaels WrestleMania matches or John Cena WrestleMania matches, you never really hear this match brought up. And I just think, and this rivalry brought up rather, and I just feel like there is so much to dive into with this and how important it was on numerous different levels. But before we get into that, like I always do, I like to just touch on the current product a bit. And I just want to say, I'll start with Monday Night Raw. And man, oh man, am I loving Monday Night Raw right now. And I think it's because of how strong the mid-card is. And if you rewind back to, let's say, 2-3 months ago, I was really on the SmackDown train. I was really loving SmackDown. And I still like what they're doing on SmackDown. But I really thought that SmackDown had a significant leg up on Raw for quite a while, leading from, let's say, the summer leading up to the draft. But when the draft came and went, we saw basically the entire upper mid-card of SmackDown switch over to Monday Night Raw, that being Braun Strowman, Sheamus, Matt Riddle, AJ Styles, all these guys transferred over to Monday Night Raw, and we are seeing now that these guys were one of the main reasons as to why SmackDown was so strong and why Raw is doing so well right now. So you add guys like Sheamus and AJ Styles over to an already top-heavy Raw roster with Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. Bray Wyatt comes over and he's a bona fide main event guy. You have the Hurt Business, who I love, and they're still in a bit of a feud with the New Day, and I'm hoping sooner rather than later that they get the tag team belts. But everything right now about Monday Night Raw, I have to say, is just very, very good. And the storylines are making sense. There's congruity. You're seeing like programs build week to week. Look, I wasn't a big fan of how they handled the whole Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton conclusion to their program. I really thought like WWE had something going, and then just out of sheer panic or just a sheer decision out of nowhere, no pun intended, they decide to throw the belt back on Drew McIntyre, and their program ends on a Monday Night Raw match with Randy Orton losing clean. And look, I've said it so many times, I'll say it again, Drew McIntyre is the real deal, and he is the reason why Roman Reigns is a heel right now. Don't believe me? Look, guys, I think the proof is in the pudding. The only reason that Roman Reigns is a heel right now is because Drew McIntyre has become everything that Vince McMahon and creative wanted Roman Reigns to become. He has the look, and he has gotten over, at least I believe. I guess it's hard to really judge whether or not he's gotten over with the fans. I can only speak to my subjective opinion. And I've said it so many times, the best babyface world champion that WWE has had since the full-time days of John Cena. And it's no coincidence that Roman Reigns came back as a heel, 4 months into Drew McIntyre's world championship run as a babyface on Monday Night Raw. And you see that WWE is fully behind Drew McIntyre right now. You know, I found it very telling by that, because obviously he was in the main event match on Monday Night Raw, tagging with Sheamus against Miz and Morrison. But I don't know if you guys realized, but later on in the night, they stopped advertising for the tag team match, but they just said Drew McIntyre live next, or Drew McIntyre live later on tonight. They're really centering Monday Night Raw around Drew McIntyre and how much star power he has. And I gotta say, give credit where credit is due, how they built Drew McIntyre since he came back to the company, went through NXT, came up as the lackey to Dolph Ziggler, tagged with Dolph Ziggler, won the tag team championships, had that small alliance alongside Braun Strowman to battle the Shield. Then he was alongside Baron Corbin and Bobby Lashley, and they had that series of matches with the Shield. The slow build to Drew McIntyre being what he is now has just been absolutely brilliant by creative and WWE. And now you see them reaping the rewards on Monday Night Raw, as they have a very top-heavy roster with legitimate main event guys in Drew, in Bray, in Randy Orton. I would make the argument that AJ Styles is a bona fide main event guy, and I'm really excited to this upcoming program and match at TLC between Styles and Drew McIntyre. And then they've sprinkled in these very strong upper mid-card guys. Like, a guy like Sheamus, he is probably the perfect tweener on Monday Night Raw between the upper mid-card and main event. I've said it before, I really do believe that Sheamus still has a main event run left in him, and I do think that following the TLC pay-per-view, we are going to see Sheamus versus Drew McIntyre. And you know what? If they decide to not do Drew versus Roman Reigns at this year's WrestleMania, which I really don't see how they do it. I don't know if AJ Styles is going to be the guy to take the belt off of Drew McIntyre. And you would just have to assume that the only way these two lock up at WrestleMania is if Drew drops the belt and then wins the Rumble for the second year in a row. I think that they may be building Sheamus versus Drew McIntyre, and it could be for WrestleMania. Because if it's not Drew versus Roman, who is Drew going to tangle with at WrestleMania? And you may think that, I guess, Sheamus is a long time away from being a bona fide main event guy. The Miz made reference to it that the last time he held a WWE championship, a world title rather, was 5 years ago for a couple of weeks to bridge the gap to Roman Reigns being that guy. And I believe he dropped the belt to Roman Reigns on a Monday Night Raw as well. But you know what? What they're doing with Sheamus right now, this slow build, he's kind of teetering more as a babyface right now, but I don't think we could fully commit to him as that. I really think that if they do this properly, Drew versus Sheamus could be a legitimate WrestleMania match. And maybe you guys scoff at that, I understand, but who else on Monday Night Raw? Who else on Monday Night Raw could go toe-to-toe with Drew McIntyre for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. And like I said, this is assuming that they don't match him and Roman up against each other. The only other guy would be Bray Wyatt. And I suppose that they could go down that road because I don't know how long the Randy Orton Fiend angle is going to last. But beyond that, I guess there really is no dancing partner for Bray Wyatt. So maybe maybe Sheamus is just a short in-between program following AJ Styles and right before they get into the main event for WrestleMania. But look, I'm really looking forward to the Sheamus and Drew McIntyre program, which I think at this point it's inevitable that at some point in the near future, these two are going to have at least one match. And I think it's going to end up with Sheamus turning on Drew and he goes back to being heel. And maybe they have a match at the Elimination Chamber, or maybe they lock up at Royal Rumble. Who knows? But either way, Raw has set themselves up nicely here for right up until WrestleMania season, because even the United States Championship, because now you see, I think that they're going to go ahead with Keith Lee and Bobby Lashley at some point. You saw those guys fight on Monday Night Raw 2 weeks ago, I believe. And look, these guys, like, you just look at the physical dominance of both of them and how physically imposing both of them are in different ways, obviously. Obviously, Bobby Lashley is more aesthetically impressive, while Keith Lee is just a mountain of a man, pure strength and athleticism. But I think that is something that we could see very, very soon for the championship. And then you have a guy like Matt Riddle who, look, I think his character could be improved a bit. Like, I'm not going to lie, I've found him more amusing as of late because I think his character is just 100% being stoned. His character is like he just fired up a doobie in the back and then he comes out and just says whatever comes to mind. I think that they could go a bit beyond that and try and add some depth, but you can't deny how good he can go in the ring. And he is a guy that is a legitimate mid-card guy right now. And they could have programs with him and even AJ Styles. You still have Jeff Hardy kicking around. You know, Monday Night Raw is just very, very strong right now. And I think we're seeing that throughout the roster. Then you still have The Miz with the Money in the Bank briefcase. And look, I'm not really a fan of what they're doing with The Miz right now. And it's just a shame that John Morrison is just his sidekick. But they just have so many tools at their disposal on Monday Night Raw that between now and WrestleMania, the options are endless to mix and match some new rivalries and programs to get us there. Over on SmackDown, they're going down the road, which I, at least myself, can say I fully expected them to do, and I'm very happy with Kevin Owens. I do think that Kevin Owens is just a means to an end for Roman Reigns, but what that end is, I'm really not sure, because unlike on Monday Night Raw, where you have a lot of options and avenues you can go down in the main event picture, and like I just said, you have AJ Styles now, then it could be Sheamus, and then after that, Bray Wyatt heading into WrestleMania. Beyond Kevin Owens, I'm really not sure who could be Roman Reigns' next challenger. Because let's say they draw out this Kevin Owens-Roman Reigns program out until the Royal Rumble. And I don't think that Kevin Owens has a snowball's chance in hell at winning that championship. But nonetheless, I'm really excited to see what he could do in a main event program, which he hasn't been in quite some time, even if he doesn't come away with the championship. But beyond that, who's it going to be? Like, obviously, the first name that comes to mind is Daniel Bryan, but it seems like he is on a collision course with Sami Zayn. And if he captures the Intercontinental Championship, which I'm fully expecting he will sooner rather than later, then that kind of takes him out of the running to be a challenger for Roman Reigns. And after that, who do we really have as potential challengers for Roman Reigns' Universal Championship? Buddy Murphy? Rey Mysterio? God forbid the Power Ranger? Like, the options are really few and far between for creative over on SmackDown. And I feel like what they did at the draft, they kind of gutted SmackDown's roster in a way that they took away all their mid-card guys that was really the nucleus and the glue that held that show together. So I gotta say, in recent weeks, ever since that draft, Raw has really taken off here. And I feel like, look, SmackDown is still great because of Roman Reigns and just how good he's doing right now. But beyond Roman Reigns, I'm starting to get a bit concerned that it's just kind of becoming redundant because they don't have a lot of options. And beyond Kevin Owens, I don't know who a top challenger could be for Roman Reigns. Now, obviously, there's the rumors that The Rock might come back and challenge for that championship. If that is the case, then it really doesn't matter that they don't have any full-time guy on SmackDown to challenge Roman Reigns for the championship between now and WrestleMania. But if The Rock isn't booked and he is not an option for WrestleMania, and they are not pitting Roman Reigns against Drew McIntyre, I'm really curious as to where they're going to go in terms of who will be Roman Reigns' partner beyond the Royal Rumble down the stretch towards WrestleMania. Because, like I said, I love Kevin Owens, and I'm super excited and super happy for this guy that he's back in the main event picture where I truly believe he belongs. But after that, where I don't see him even sniffing a chance at the Universal Championship, where are you going to go? And I'm very intrigued to see what they do in terms of that. And then it leads you to wonder who could possibly win the Royal Rumble entering this year. And look, last year I thought it was pretty obvious. I was saying Drew McIntyre wins the Rumble and turns babyface up like last year at this time. In early December, I started beating that drum that I wanted Drew McIntyre to win the Rumble, turn babyface, and face off against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. And I know you might be saying, oh yeah, I'm sure you said that. But look, go back, listen to the shows I was on with Matt last year on the WWE podcast. I said it numerous times. Go back. The proof is there. I swear God, guys, I'm not lying. But I said I wanted it to be Drew, and I thought it was going to be Drew or Roman Reigns. Those were the two guys I thought that were the clear-cut favorites going in. The year before that, it was clear and obvious that it was Seth Rollins. I remember I had a Royal Rumble party at my house, and all of us picked Seth Rollins to win that match, the Royal Rumble match. And look, it was predictable, but Seth Rollins was the guy in 2019. Last year, maybe not really predictable with Drew. I really wanted him to and thought that there was an outside chance that they could, but it was kind of a two-horse race between Drew and Roman Reigns, even though I think Roman Reigns was the clear favorite. This year, I think it is absolutely wide open, and I really have no idea who that could be. I mean, they could go Daniel Bryan. If he doesn't win the Intercontinental Championship, and that's the long-term goal here, I can see it. Because for as a historic career as Daniel Bryan has had, he's never won a Royal Rumble. So Daniel Bryan winning the Royal Rumble to challenge Drew McIntyre for the Universal Championship, I could see that. If you look maybe over on Monday Night Raw, because beyond Daniel Bryan, I don't see anyone on SmackDown who could possibly win it. I would have maybe said Kevin Owens if he wasn't already engaging in a main event feud with Roman Reigns. But now that he's already there, I really can't see them booking him to win the Royal Rumble. Over on Monday Night Raw, I mean, I could see Keith Lee. I think it's maybe a bit too soon for him, but I could see WWE pulling the trigger in that respect with Keith Lee winning it, because he could go up against Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania. You could make Bray Wyatt win it. I mean, that would be interesting. I don't know the last time Bray Wyatt's been in a Royal Rumble match, period. And it would be kind of intriguing to see The Fiend win that match. So I think this far out, the only real two options are Daniel Bryan or The Fiend. Those are the only two guys I could really see winning the Royal Rumble at this point. And obviously, that's a way too early prediction, almost 2 months out from the Royal Rumble, and a lot can change between now and then, especially with a pay-per-view along the way. But I think at this juncture, if I was a betting man, I'd probably say The Fiend Bray Wyatt, because like I said, I don't really know what they're going to do with Daniel Bryan, and a lot is hinging on whether or not The Rock is going to come back to face Roman Reigns. And Matt said it on his show with the Botch guy reviewing the Survivor Series pay-per-view, that this program, the Tribal Chief program and that storyline with Roman Reigns, it is screaming for The Rock to come back. And yeah, I guess they could bring The Rock back, let's say a year from now when fans are back in the building, we're back to full-on normalcy and what have you. But by that time, is Roman Reigns still going to have this heat? Is the storyline still going to feel as fresh? Like, doing a full calendar year, Roman Reigns being Universal Champion, because I don't think that they'd take the belt off him even once if they do want to pit him against The Rock. So if they're going to do this program between Roman Reigns and The Rock, I feel like it has to be this year. And if it's not with fans, then so be it. Because I just, for the sake of the storyline, I don't know if they could string this out another full calendar year up until WrestleMania in 2022. So that's why I think at this point I can't really see Daniel Bryan going down that main event road. I think he'll just stay in the Intercontinental Championship picture and carry that mid-card, because we all know that the mid-card on SmackDown needs it right now. So enough about the current product, and let's get into WWE rivalries. And this week it is Shawn Michaels versus John Cena. And this rivalry was important in a lot of different ways. And I think the most important thing for me, and the reason why I remember it the most, is because it closed the book on the Ruthless Aggression era. WrestleMania 23, which is the match, the WrestleMania of which John Cena and HBK headlined, that was the last WrestleMania of which you could say WWE was in the Ruthless Aggression era. And to be honest, you could make the case that they had already exited it, but they were still in PG-14 mode. I believe they only went full on PG in 2008, I want to say, and this was in 2007. And this was the last WrestleMania that I watched live and followed each and every storyline through and through heading into it until 2012, I want to say. I've said this numerous times on the show that I completely detached from wrestling from mid-2007 until mid-2011. So I missed a solid 4 years there. But I will always remember this WrestleMania, and more so this program, because it was kind of like the last of my childhood. You know, 2007, I was 13 years old. And like I said, I was a big Ruthless Aggression guy, really grew up in it. I caught the tail end of the Attitude Era, but I was a Ruthless Aggression guy. And this was the last rivalry, big rivalry that I remember, HBK and John Cena. And just to give you a backstory of where these two guys were when they locked up, was HBK was just coming off of the rebirth of Degeneration X. You know, I covered a show on how in early 2006 he had a feud with Vince McMahon, and it eventually turned into the McMahons versus Degeneration X that spilled all the way to September 2006. Following their feud with the McMahons, DX engaged in a feud with Rated RKO, Edge, and Randy Orton. And they went back and forth for a few months, all the way until the new year in January. But in January, Triple H had a real-life injury, and I believe he hurt his knee yet again, which really kind of unevened the odds between between Rated RKO and Degeneration X. So you had Shawn Michaels in full Degeneration X mode, and then all of a sudden Triple H goes on the shelf, and he was out for, I want to say, almost a year. Like I said, I kind of detached from wrestling when he got injured, and I believe he only came back at SummerSlam that year to fight Booker T, because there was the whole King of Kings versus King Booker match. So this put Triple H on the shelf for quite a while here. And Meanwhile, on Monday Night Raw, you had John Cena really taking over as the top guy, the face of the company. Because by early 2007, he was already a three-time WWE champion. He had had a WrestleMania victory over Triple H. He had had the feud over the championship with Edge all through the summer of 2006 that culminated at the Unforgiven pay-per-view in September of 2006. And John Cena was really hitting his stride as being the bona fide face of the company. And this was right around the time when the crowd really started to revolt against him. But as we entered 2006, we saw that there was a lack of true competition for John Cena in the storyline, that they were running out of guys to pit him against. Because following his program with Edge, he had kind of a cross-brand pay-per-view with the Big Show, and they had Team Cena versus Team Big Show at the Survivor Series. Then he had a program with Umaga. I believe he was the first guy to hand Umaga a victory. I remember they had a pretty brutal match at Royal Rumble 2007 where it was a last man standing match. And John Cena wrapped he detached the ring rope from the ring and wrapped it around Umaga's neck and applied the STF with it. Pretty graphic scene. I would suggest you guys go look that up. But, you know, Umaga was a monster heel, but at least myself, I never really took him seriously as a guy who could dethrone John Cena for the WWE Championship. And they had already done the Edge, been there, done that. They had still yet to engage in a Randy Orton John Cena feud, which we know they beat to death in the succeeding 5, 6, 7 years following this 2007. But he at this time was engaged with Rated RKO against D-Generation X. So John Cena, following his program with Edge, was really kind of treading water and really didn't have a legitimate program as you typically see from top babyface world champions in WWE. But WWE was going through this time in late 2006, early 2007, that they were still kind of they had the faces of the company. You had John Cena, you had Batista, those two were your faces, and you were going full steam ahead. But the top guys, the top antagonists, I guess you could say, the guys to pit them against, that's where they were lacking at this point. And John Cena, you could make the case that, yeah, he had beat Edge in that lengthy feud, and, you know, he had beat Triple H at the WrestleMania previous WrestleMania. But I would still argue that at this juncture, in early 2007, John Cena had yet to have that program and match that really solidified him as the guy and on the road to being one of the best. Because, I mean, his program with Triple H the year prior, it was short and sweet. You know, it came, it went, they had a good match at WrestleMania 22, they had the triple threat match with Edge at the Backlash that followed, and then that was it. Then, you know, he had the program with Edge, which was really good in 2006, in the summer of 2006, but Edge wasn't yet the megastar that he is today. You know, at his first ever WrestleMania, he faced JBL, winning his first ever WWE Championship. But JBL, one-time WWE champion, besides that, a mid-card guy, more so of a tag team guy for the rest of his career. So, I mean, yeah, he had beaten Triple H, but again, the program wasn't really that great. The entire program between him and Triple H was pretty much just old school versus new school. And beyond that, there wasn't a whole lot to it. So John Cena had yet to be engaged with a bona fide megastar and have that big mega match that really felt important. Insert Shawn Michaels. At this point, like I said, Shawn Michaels was coming off of the program with D-Generation X against Rated RKO. Before that, his last one-on-one feud was with Mr. McMahon. Before that, it was with Kurt Angle. Before that, it was with Edge, a very brief program in early 2005. So at this juncture, Shawn Michaels, rather, had not been in a one-on-one program that was main event status since his one in late 2003, early 2004 with Triple H. And I know you could probably make the argument that his program with Kurt Angle for a large portion of 2005 was a main event caliber rivalry, which it was, but it wasn't for the WWE Championship. It never headlined a show. Shawn Michaels was almost 3 years removed from a main event rivalry in which he was headlining a show and being a and challenging for a world championship. And I think he was the right guy at the right time for John Cena in early 2007. And how it came to be is that he went the distance in the Royal Rumble and was the second to last and was the last guy eliminated, rather, before The Undertaker won and punched his ticket to the main event at WrestleMania 23. Fun fact, he didn't main event WrestleMania 23. He went on around 8:45 and beat Batista for the World Heavyweight Championship in like the fourth or fifth match on the card. And this was just around the time when the World Heavyweight Championship really started taking a backseat and became a secondary title because they stopped abiding by the strict brand split rules. And when you do that, one world championship, aka the one that isn't the WWE Championship, will by default become the less meaningful championship. But that's neither here nor there. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. So he was the last guy eliminated and the runner-up to The Undertaker at the Royal Rumble 2007. And at this point, you know, this was during a time when whoever was the runner-up at the Royal Rumble would kind of be the guy who would face the other world champion at the succeeding WrestleMania. Like the year before at the Royal Rumble, the Royal Rumble, Rey Mysterio had won it, and the two last guys eliminated before he won were Orton and Triple H. Triple H challenged Cena for the WWE Championship, and Orton was involved in the World Heavyweight Championship with Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle. The year before that, when Batista won it, the last guy eliminated was John Cena. John Cena went up against JBL for the WWE Championship. So when Shawn Michaels got eliminated last by The Undertaker, it was kind of a hint that, well, Undertaker's challenging for the world title on SmackDown. Maybe HBK is the guy to do so on Raw, which had happened the preceding 2 years at the Royal Rumble. But Rated RKO wasn't completely out of this storyline because Shawn Michaels was still in full-on DX mode. Like, he was still wearing his DX gear to the ring. He was still using the DX entrance music. So his beef with Rated RKO was far from gone. But to kind of integrate John Cena into this storyline, he stepped in as HBK's tag team partner against Rated RKO in a tag team match on Monday Night Raw. And if I didn't mention it already, Rated RKO were the world tag team champions. So this unlikely duo between John Cena and Shawn Michaels had a chance to capture the gold.
think Sean was going to come out. I think he was going to do that super kick, JR.
So HBK and John Cena win the tag team championships, and this would be the first time John Cena ever won a tag team championship in WWE, and I gotta think, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm not sure if he ever won one after this. Maybe I'm wrong there, but off the top of my head, I can't think of another time John Cena won the tag team championships. And as for Shawn Michaels, I know he later on won it with Triple H. But before this, I think the last time he had won the tag team championships was maybe back when he was the Rockers, or maybe he had won it briefly when Diesel was his henchman in the mid-90s. But nevertheless, this program was all but certain to this point, and as you heard, The Undertaker's music hit, and he came up from the ring because he had yet to decide who he was going to WrestleMania to face. So he was still, you know, a lingering factor in all of this, and the decision had been far from made at this juncture. But another thing I'm not, if you guys heard, was that Shawn Michaels almost super kicked John Cena following that match, but he didn't. John Cena turned around and Shawn Michaels was cocked and ready to, you know, give him the sweet chin music, but he didn't. And then John Cena started asking him, you know, is it about the WWE Championship and what have you. And as this program went on, that became a reoccurring theme to this, is when would Shawn Michaels kick John Cena's head off. And eventually Shawn Michaels became the official number one contender to the WWE Championship after Undertaker officially decided to go up against Batista for the World Heavyweight title. Shawn Michaels won a triple threat match between himself, Randy Orton, and Edge to punch his ticket to the main event of WrestleMania against John Cena. But all this while them being the World Tag Team Champions. So you have two guys slated to go one-on-one at WrestleMania while being the tag team champions. And I thought this was really cool. It had never been done before, and it added a really cool wrinkle into this whole angle. And all this while, they have this reoccurring theme of, when will Shawn Michaels super kick John Cena? Because again, this wasn't the typical Shawn Michaels we had been accustomed to since his return in 02. He was D-Generation X Shawn Michaels. So yeah, he was a babyface and beloved by the fans. He did have that kind of heelish tactic behind him like he so often did prior. And now with the whole DX gimmick still in full force, you knew that that was a lingering factor in the background. As they approached towards WrestleMania, they started having these kind of inter-promotional matches and trying to hype up both main events, one on Raw and SmackDown respectively. And over on SmackDown, you had Batista versus Undertaker, and they had a few series of matches against Shawn Michaels and John Cena, which, to be honest, I was never a fan of, you know, these inter-promotional type of matches. This is right when WWE really started abolishing, you know, the brand split rules and really adhering to it, which, to be honest, is one of the reasons why I kind of tuned out during this time. But nevertheless, they were having these sequence of tag team matches. And on the Monday Night Raw, Undertaker and Batista came over to have a tag team match against Cena and Shawn Michaels.
And then he got John Cena, and now they have Batista. 300 pounder bearing that shoulder into John Cena, the world champion. Look at this again. You gotta believe that Tisha going for the Undertaker's head, or was it going for?
Well, you're gonna have to figure that one out. I think Batista knows.
Michaels and Cena on the same page thus far as Michaels gets that tag, and the world's heavyweight champion Batista sending Michaels to the ride. Michaels goes airborne, and Michaels snips up, hitting Shawn Michaels, who catches the Undertaker to enter the frame.
Yes! Oh no!
The dead man! The demon of Death Valley! The Undertaker!
Shawn Michaels knows. Oh my gosh!
What a shot! What a shot on Michaels! And now Batista, what a spinebuster on the WWE champion! Batista and the Undertaker are in the yard here.
That's right. Oh,
Michael's going for a ride.
The two big dogs from SmackDown are having a dead ball right now.
Michael's going for a ride. Yeah! And the Undertaker is to Shawn Michaels right on the world's champion Batista.
What the hell?
The Undertaker's been Michaels on the Undertaker's old tag team partner.
And now,
where the hell is the dead man going? The Undertaker leaving the ring. Leaving Batista, the world's champion, alone with Shawn Michaels and John Cena.
Had Cena set up for the Batista bomb.
Look at this. Look at Cena with that modified slam on Batista. And it is Shawn Michaels and John Cena double teaming the world's heavyweight champion. The elbow to the sternum.
You gotta do what you gotta do. It's 2-on-1. Not because of John Cena and Shawn Michaels, but because the Undertaker took a walk.
The Undertaker leaving his partner Batista. It's got to be one. And the bad blood between Batista and Undertaker is so prevalent. We've seen the Friday Night SmackDown week after week. A double, you can't see me.
Double. Knuckle shuffle from John Cena.
Oh my God. Michaels will sweep to your music on John Cena out of nowhere. Where did that come from?
What the hell?
My God, Michaels, out of nowhere, just kicked Cena's head off. Michaels kicked his own partner's head off. The man Shawn Michaels will face at WrestleMania.
Wait a minute, look at this.
Batista got the arm over. Batista and the Undertaker win the match. But the story is, Shawn Michaels just almost beheaded John Cena, the WWE champion.
And Shawn Michaels said he'd never see it coming, and we'd never see it coming.
So after weeks of hinting at it, and as you heard Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler allude to it, Shawn Michaels finally drills John Cena with a sweet chin music in the middle of their tag team match against Batista and Undertaker. And John Cena sure as hell did not see that coming and hands Batista and Taker the win, even after Taker walked out and turned on Batista mid-match. And like I said, this was the reoccurring theme of when would Shawn Michaels turn and finally take his shot at John Cena leading into their WrestleMania match. So they built this as to be a really important match, and they made it feel as though that John Cena needed to beat Shawn Michaels to solidify himself as the guy. And look, for all intents and purposes, John Cena was already the guy at this point. He had been the guy for 2 years solid. Three-time WWE champion, you know, save for 4 months, he had been the WWE champion for 2 years solid. But as I previously mentioned, he had yet to have that one program and that one match and that one big win that really solidified himself as the true top guy in the company. And Shawn Michaels was that guy standing in his way. And I got to say that the promo package to their match at WrestleMania 23 was one of the best, and like so much other things in this particular rivalry, one of the most underrated ones ever produced by WWE. And I'm a guy that oftentimes on these shows, I play the promo packages because of how important I think they are into building towards a match. And I remember watching this with my girlfriend, and, you know, she doesn't sugarcoat stuff with me, that if she thinks I'm watching something stupid, she'll tell me. But once I was watching this match with her, and after she saw the promo package, she told me they made me feel like this was something important. And WWE used to do this so well with their promo packages. And, you know, obviously the famous one is My Way, to the song My Way by Limp Bizkit, you know, singing along to the Rock vs. Austin promo package. Even the Crack Addict one by Limp Bizkit at WrestleMania 19 between Rock and Austin. Batista and Triple H had some good promo packages. But I would argue that this one is even better than the Rock Austin one at WrestleMania 17. And what I'm telling you doesn't do it justice. I'm going to let you guys listen for yourselves.
John Cena has been WWE champion 20 of the last 24 months. Shawn Michaels looking to regain the WWE title he has not held in 9 years. And Michaels got back in the game by qualifying this match in a triple threat rules contest.
I say it'll be Randy Orton squaring off against Edge and against Shawn Michaels.
Who is going to go to WrestleMania? Who will face John Cena?
Michaels!
WrestleMania 23, John Cena versus the Showstopper.
This is what our business is all about.
You want to talk about goosebumps? You guys should look at my arms right now. It's that promo package, I have to say, maybe not as good as My Way between Rock and Austin, but they really built this match up to feel important. And man, oh man, was it was absolute fantastic main event. 5 stars across the board. Like, we all know Shawn Michaels always does at WrestleMania. JR said it in the promo package that no one ever outperforms him in a big match situation. And you gotta give credit to John Cena too. I know people often crap all over his moveset and the five moves of doom and whatnot, but John Cena always came to play when all the chips were on the table. And I gotta say, in these main event matches that he had, that he never really disappointed. Maybe his main event one with The Rock at WrestleMania 29, their second installment, but I think that was more The Rock getting injured in that match. But in all of his main event contests at WrestleMania, I never saw a match that John Cena disappointed. And we all know Shawn Michaels is the best in-ring competitor in the history of the business. And they went toe-to-toe. John Cena wins by submission and retains the WWE Championship. And, you know, they had another match at a Raw the later that month. They had, like, a 60-minute match on a Monday Night Raw. And bear in mind, I believe that Raw was still 2 hours at this time. I could be wrong, but nevertheless, 60 minutes match on a Monday Night Raw, that was incredible. And Shawn Michaels actually got the win in that match. Non-title match, of course, but he got the win in that championship match, but in that non-title match, rather. Sorry, guys, I'm tired today. but to go back on their WrestleMania match and their program as a whole, I think that this rivalry gets glossed over so much, and this match gets like glossed over so much and not talked about, and I don't understand why, because this made John Cena. When he beat HBK at this WrestleMania, it cemented him as not only the best in the business at the time, but it made the fans know, like, okay, this is the guy for the foreseeable future. Because you don't beat HBK at WrestleMania unless you're a significant player. Because let's look at the guys who beat Shawn Michaels at WrestleManias. The Undertaker, and I'm talking about one-on-one matches here. The Undertaker, Kurt Angle, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Kind of stops there, doesn't it? I'm talking about Shawn Michaels after he became a main event guy. So after he became a main event guy and won the world championship from Bret Hart at WrestleMania 12, only those three guys beat Shawn Michaels in one-on-one matches at WrestleMania. Kurt Angle, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Undertaker. And John Cena is in that mix as well. And that's pretty elite company if you ask me. You have Taker and Steve Austin, who are probably the two best of all time, and Kurt Angle, who is top 10 minimum. And you throw John Cena into that mix as only one of four to beat HBK in one-on-one contests at WrestleMania, and it made John Cena and cemented his legacy as, right now, I think you have to put John Cena on the Mount Rushmore. And this is by far his most important WrestleMania match of his career. And I know most people point to his one-on-one match with The Rock at WrestleMania 28, because, like I said, their second installment was kind of a disappointment. And, you know, when are the sequels ever better than the originals? And, you know, their WrestleMania 28 match was great, and it was certainly hyped up. And I believe WrestleMania 28 was the most bought pay-per-view ever at by WWE, at least at the time anyway. But this match meant more, because by the time The Rock and Cena faced off in 2012 in Florida at WrestleMania 28, Cena was a made guy. The Rock was a Hollywood movie star, superstar, megastar, whatever you want to call him. He was 7 years detached from being a full-time in-ring competitor when he went up against John Cena. So it was more of a hype match. But this one, with Cena and HBK, it isn't talked about enough. And this is what made Cena. And this is what paved the way for Cena to get to that WrestleMania 28 match against The Rock. If he doesn't beat HBK at WrestleMania 23... he doesn't face The Rock at WrestleMania 28. He doesn't win the world title 16 times. HBK made Cena with this match. And as for HBK, you know, I don't think he gets talked about enough in terms of what he meant for the business, especially when he came back. We all know what he did in the mid to late 90s when he was carrying the company before the torch got passed to Stone Cold Steve Austin. But what we see here with HBK is, once he came back, that is, was him making guys and putting over guys as the best. And that's one thing about HBK I'll always respect. I don't put him up there with the likes of Rock and Austin and Taker and even John Cena, for that matter, just because I don't know if he was ever the main event guy as a babyface. And I think being over as the main event guy as a babyface is what kind of, you know, puts you in that tier above everyone else. And I don't think he ever got to the point of a Rock, an Austin, a Cena, or a Taker in that respect. But beyond those four, you really can't deny what HBK did for the business as, you know, bar none, the best in-ring performer ever in the company. And by him putting over Cena, he pretty much made Cena one of the best ever. And I would make a strong argument that Cena is the best ever for how long he was on top and how well he did. And you guys can make, you know, the criticisms that he was booed and he was boring and he was shoved down our throats. And look, I was never a super big fan of the John Cena character, but I'll tell you one thing. He was original and he made it work. And it is not easy to make a character work like that when you are being booed out of the building every night and you're supposed to be cheered. And one of the best ever on the mics. He never got rattled. He made it part of his gimmick. You know, the way John Cena took all those boos when he was supposed to be the guy cheered like Austin was and The Rock was before him and turn it into what he did, you know, all the credit to John Cena. Not my cup of tea, the character, but looking at it objectively, you have to give credit where credit is due. And all in all, this rivalry won the most important of a generation because, like I said before, it closed the book on the Ruthless Aggression era. And this is the lasting memory for me when I think of the Ruthless Aggression era and that incredible time in wrestling. And it was capped off by two of the all-time greats putting on one of the best and most underrated WrestleMania main events in history. Well, look, guys, I hope you enjoyed the episode today. It's a match and a rivalry that clearly means a lot to me for numerous reasons, of which I outlined. And I hope I did a decent job at trying to relay and demonstrate how this rivalry made me feel and what it means to me. And maybe you guys go back and watch some of these matches and the absolute classic that main evented WrestleMania 23. As always, you can get me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. You can email Matt at Real WWE Podcast. And I will talk to you guys next week.